Now, listeners to this radio station will be very familiar with the music of Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark, or OMD, who, not surprisingly, have got a very impressive back catalogue, which is why you hear lots of their songs on the radio very often. And I'm delighted to say, joining me today is the co-founder of the group, Andy McCluskey. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Dave. Great to talk with you.
Yeah, good to talk to you as well. Now, I've got to ask one question straight away. As somebody that lives on the Wirral, there's a red telephone box that you made very famous some years ago, I gather.
You're absolutely right. Yes, Paul and I both grew up in a place on the north coast of the Wirral called Mells.
And, oh, yes.
Neither of us had telephones in our parents' houses. So when the band started, there was a telephone box that was sort of equidistant between our two houses by a big pub called the Railway Inn. And that was basically our office.
Right.
And also we wrote a song about it. Our second single was called Red Frame White Light about that telephone box.
That's so, right.
Yeah, a few years ago, the BT tried to take it away and there was a big campaign to save it. So it's now got its own support group, the Friends of the Telephone Box. And it's actually, it's an OMD museum. I think it's equal smallest museum in the whole of the country because there's another telephone box that's a museum as well.
Right, yeah. And I think there's a special plaque there as well, isn't there now?
Yes, yes. They unveiled a blue plaque by the telephone box as
well.
Wow, fantastic.
I think
we're obviously, you know, just about the most famous people that there are from Mells.
Right. So we'll go back to the start of the band, formed in 1978 on the Wirral, I gather.
Yes. I mean, Paul and I had actually, Paul came to my primary school when he was seven. So we've known each other since we were seven. But musically, we kind of hit it off in 1975 when I started listening to German imports.
Right.
But Paul had built himself a stereo. I only had my mother's mono record player. So I used to go around to Paul's house and we just started listening to this music. And then we stupidly decided we want to start making music. But we didn't have any instruments. I had my one and only upside down left-handed bass guitar and I'm right-handed.
Right.
And Paul had nothing, so he started cannibalizing his auntie's radios and using the circuit boards to make weird noises.
Fantastic. So you did the opposite of Paul McCartney because he's left-handed and he had a right-handed bass, I think, originally, didn't he? So you've gone the other way.
Well, if we're continuing the Wirral stories,
yes.
Yeah, I got everybody to give me my money for my 16th birthday.
Right.
And I went to Park Selling Services by Birkenhead Park Station. Do
right.
you remember
yes,
that?
Yes, I remember that. Yes, yeah.
And the only bass I could afford, because it was left-handed, was this bright red Wilson Rapier. So that's what I bought, and I learned to play upside down. And to this day, I still play upside down strings.
Fantastic. I also read on Wikipedia that you bought some second-hand equipment and had to pay for it by mail order at £7.76 a week.
Oh, no, that wasn't secondhand. That was a brand new.
Oh, it was brand new. I stand
horrible
corrected.
Horrible sounding synthesizer.
Yeah. Right.
A Korg micro preset that we got from my mother's catalogue. Yeah, it was the only way we could afford it at the time.
Wow, fantastic. Now, what I was going to ask you about next is the music. You formed the band in the late 70s. And at that mm-hmm. time, I'm guessing punk was still pretty big. So you were sort of going out on a limb in a way, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, we'd found our alternative music with German music in the mid-70s. So just before punk happened, Paul and I had got into kind of alternative electronic music.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, listen, it wasn't just punk, though, to be honest. For the first couple of years of our lives, we really felt like we were swimming against the tide.
Yeah.
And but what was amazing was that, you know, our crazy hobby doing, well, frankly, music that our friends didn't like either.
Right.
So when we dared to do a gig in October 78... within 18 months, we had a hit single. And within 2 years, you know, our experimental music, well, it just happened to be the new big pop music all around the world with English synth pop.
Yeah, so a bit of serendipity there. You just happened to be around at the right time.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Right, now, I know I've been looking this up as well. You've sold over 40 million records worldwide. That's pretty staggering, isn't it?
That's not bad for a couple of guys who started as a dare to do one gig with a stupid named band. Yeah, it was all right.
That's going to be my next question. Stupid name, well, it's one that we're all familiar with now, but where the heck did that come from?
Well, do you know what? Paul and I used to go to, well, again, you'll know this, a club in Erics called Liverpool, which is on
Yes.
Matthew Street, directly across the road from where the Cavern was.
That's right.
And they had this kind of open policy on Thursday nights for local bands to play. So we knocked on the door of the office and we just said, yeah, could we come on a Thursday night and do our electronic music with just two of us and a tape recorder? And they went, yeah, what are you called? And we're like, we thought you'd tell us to get lost, actually. We haven't got a name. We'll get back to that. So we went back to my bedroom wall where I used to write things. And
Right.
we just went, right, we need a weird name. We need something that tells people we're not rock, we're not punk, we're not
Yeah.
disco. And I was planning to write a song called Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. And I just went, well, that's weird enough. People
Yeah,
will know
let's
we're
call us
different with a
that.
name like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
as I say, it didn't matter. It was just a one-off gig. It was just a dare. And
Yeah.
here we are 45 years later.
Yeah. Now, I gather you were given your first break supporting Gary Numan back in 79.
Yeah, we released our first single, Electricity, on Factory Records. And he bought the single in spring of 79, just before he was about to have two massive hit singles,
Right.
number ones. He was going out on the road with a huge stage set, and he wanted a curtain in front of it so nobody could see it.
Okay.
So conveniently, surreptitious again, he was looking for a band that he liked the music of, but there weren't a big band, so there's only two of us. So he asked us to, and we'd only just signed our deal. We hadn't had no money, and we
Right.
said, "Well, we'd love to, but we've actually got no money." So in those days, one, people used to ask the support band to pay to come on the tour because it was
Right.
promotion. It was
Yeah,
called a
yeah.
buy-on. He didn't ask for that. And secondly, he said, "Well, you can travel in my coach, and my trucks will take your equipment, and our caterers will feed you." And we were like, so he was wonderful. It was a really great thing. And of course, so we played all these sold-out shows in the autumn of 79, and then exactly a year later, after Messages and Enola Gay had been released,
Yeah.
we played all the same places sold out ourselves.
Fantastic, yeah. And I gather you've also inspired lots of other 80s bands, the likes of New Order, Tears for Fears, A-ha. All of them have been influenced by your music because you were there first.
Well, a few people have actually let on to us that they were inspired by us, and it's quite flattering. So
Yeah.
we'll take that as a compliment.
Indeed, including one Karl Bartos from Kraftwerk, and I'm guessing they were a big influence on you in the early days.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, September the 11th, 1975, at the
Right.
Liverpool Empire,
Yes.
I was sat in seat Q36.
Right.
And I saw Kraftwerk, and I remember it because it was the first day of the rest of my life.
It
And 75, it was the height of long hair and flared denims and
was,
lead
yes,
guitar
remember
solos.
it well.
And these four guys come out with short hair and suits and ties, and two of them look like they're playing tea trays with electronic knitting needles. And
Yes.
I was like, I mean, I didn't look like them. I looked like Tom Baker as Doctor Who with an afro and a very long scarf and a trench coat. But yeah, that was it. That was when I was like, wow, I want to do that. And then fortunately, I became friends with Carl over the years.
And another thing I only learned about you when I was doing the research for this is that you were actually the principal songwriter and producer for Atomic Kitten, no less.
For My Sins, I actually
Yeah.
became
How did that
a
happen
creative.
then?
By the time we got to the mid-90s, music industry changes, and a band that was considered to be an 80s synth band was perceived as past its sell-by date.
Right.
So I felt like I was banging my head against a brick wall at the time. And strangely enough, I happened to say this to Karl Bartos,
Right.
and he said to me, "Well, why don't you write for somebody else?" But he said, "Actually, why don't you create a band? Because if you write for somebody else, you don't have any control over it. Why don't you create a vehicle for your own songs?" And I said,
Right.
"Well, what shall I do? What sort of?" He said, "Well, what's the best kind of manufactured band in the world?" And I said, "Oh, three-piece girl band. All the three-piece girl bands, like the Supremes and the Shirelles and even Bananarama, they were brilliant."
They
So
were.
Karl Bartos said to me, "Create a three-piece girlfriend." So actually, Kraftwerk invented Atomic Kitten. Get your head around that one.
Yeah, well, as I say, that's something I couldn't believe when I was convinced you're going to say no, it's just an urban myth, but you've confirmed that it is true.
Yeah, no, it was great fun. I mean, Stuart Kershaw, who plays drums in OMD these days,
Yeah.
and I, we spent 2 years writing songs in my studio and working with the girls, hoping to get them a record deal. And then we did, and it was amazing. And the first album that we wrote for, I mean, Stuart and I co-wrote five top 20 singles for them on that first album.
Wow.
And
So it
it
wasn't
was, yeah,
just
it,
Hole again then. There was other ones after that.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of strong songs on that first album. But unfortunately, as is the greedy way of the music industry, you can spend all of your money and time making something successful, and then once it's successful, everybody else starts elbowing you for a
Of
bigger slice of
course,
the
of
pie.
course. That's the
And
ruthless business you're in, isn't it?
yeah, their manager, who I gave them to, I gave the band to their manager, and the record company ended up ripping up our contract. So for 4 years, I couldn't talk to them other than through lawyers, which was a
Oh,
bit sad.
dear.
But yeah, there you go.
Rather
Strange
like it
life.
was for the Beatles towards the end of their career together. Just
It can get
litigation all the
messy.
time, yeah.
It can get messy, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the next question is going to be quite difficult, I think, to answer. But if you had to pick one OMD track that was your favourite, the one that you're most pleased with, what would that be, do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I will just randomly pick one. I mean, the first time you do something is always amazing because you
Yeah.
can't repeat the first time.
Right.
So I would have to probably say Electricity.
Right.
We wrote it when we were 16 in the back
Fantastic.
room at Paul's mum's house in
Right.
Wales.
Yeah.
And what the first time, you know, when we released it on Factory Records, holding this 7-inch record in your hand, going, "This is our record. We wrote
Yeah,
this when we
yeah.
were 16." That was an incredible feeling.
I'm sure it was, yeah. And I bet you've probably still got a copy of it somewhere
I
on
have. Do you know how
vinyl.
much they're worth on eBay
Oh,
now? Good
tell me
grief.
about it. Yes. I know, because I have tried in the past. And my claim to fame is I had one of the very first pressings of the Beatles' Penny Lane with a picture sleeve, which was unusual in those days.
Wow, it
And I think
was,
if I
wasn't
was
it?
to sell that, that would be worth quite a bit of money now as well.
But you wouldn't sell it.
I wouldn't sell, even though I've got everything on CD and MP3 these days, I still like to keep all the vinyl.
Do you know what's amazing is, of course, you know, 20 odd years ago, we thought that vinyl was done and dusted and dead.
Yes.
And here we are now, where CDs are dying out, but vinyl is
It's
still
still.
growing.
And there's even been a resurgence of cassettes in some places, which is even more
Oh, the
bizarre,
new.
isn't it?
Our new album is also out on cassette. You
Oh,
know,
wow.
the completist collectors will take anything you give
Of course they
them.
will. Of course they will. Yeah. Now, one of my favourite tracks of yours is one of the less well-known ones, and that's Talking Loud and Clear,
Oh, yeah.
1984. And the reason I remember that particularly, it's one of the few 12-inch singles that I've actually got in my collection. And I used to love
I think you've
listening
got a
to that.
massive vinyl collection in the attic
I have
somewhere.
indeed, yes. And I've got an even bigger CD collection with 1,200 tracks, I think, CDs, all catalogued
Oh,
as well. How sad is that?
you know what? Everybody has to have an outlet for their OCD, and obviously records are yours.
They certainly are. They certainly are. Yeah. So we were talking about the 80s. Just talk us through what happened after that. Because I remember in the 90s, you had Sailing on the Seven Seas, didn't you? That was one of your big hits. Yeah. So
Yeah.
from there to now, what's
Oh
happened?
my gosh. Well, the original band split up at the end of the 80s. Paul
Right.
and Malcolm and Martin and I went our separate ways. And I
Right.
carried on for a few years. Then I started working with Stuart, and we co-wrote the Sugar Tax album that came out in 91.
Right.
And actually, amazingly, sold as many as the Architectural Morality album had it 10 years later, with
Right.
Souvenir and the Two Joan of Arcs on it. Yeah, so Seven Seas was my comeback
Right.
single.
Okay.
And that was 32 years ago.
Oh, that's frightening because I still think of the 90s as being recent, which is rather
So do
silly.
I.
Yeah.
Listen, do you know what's really funny is
No.
sometimes when we're on stage to wind the audience up, when we're doing the retro festivals like Rewind
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Let's Rock, we say, "We're going to play a new song now." And they go, "Boo, it's from 1991."
Fantastic. Now, your songs have been covered by other people and sampled by lots of artists as well, including, I gather, Vince Clarke, Moby, and also the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. What's going on there then?
Well, actually, the RLPO, we've played with them a few times, and it's been quite remarkable for a synth band to have their songs transcribed for a 70-piece Philharmonic Orchestra.
Right.
But it was absolutely stunning. The only scary thing was, it was really frightening standing in front of 70 classically trained musicians who can read music like
Yes,
Paul and I can't. Two guys who were thrown out of the recorder group at Mells County Primary at
yeah.
the age of 9 because we
Right.
were both miming because we hadn't bothered to learn how to actually play.
Yeah. And I know the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, they actually do concerts with artists who are no longer here, don't they? Like Elvis and people like that. They set the background music to their classic songs.
It's amazing what you can do with technology now.
It is.
You know, the Phil also do amazing nights where, you know, that they have a film on the big screen and they play the soundtrack live as well, which is remarkable. So it's, I think, you know, what we're enjoying now, having been in the band for so long, is we can wear lots of different hats. You know, we've got a new album coming out,
right?
But we still do all the hits at Retrofest. Like, we still do all the hits at any gig anyway.
Of course.
But we've played with the Philharmonic Orchestra. We've done art installations and things for the museum. And, you know, it's nice to have a nice variety, do anything you want.
I'm sure. Now, there are lots of 80s cover bands around at the moment. Is there any bands that actually cover your music?
There is actually a tribute band.
Tribute band, that's the phrase.
Yeah, called Maneuvers. And I've seen them. They're pretty good, actually.
Excellent. Brilliant. So what are the plans for the future then? I'm guessing, like most of the successful pop artists, you're carrying on because you love it, not because you need the money.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, if you told me back in 1978 that I'd still be doing this 45 years later, I would have laughed in your face. In fact, I can actually remember saying to my friend Graham, who went to Caldy Grammar School with me.
Right.
I used to see him regularly. We all used to go for drinks at the White Lion on a Friday night. Another Wirral reference. But I remember saying to him in the pub, said, if I'm still doing this when I'm 25, please shoot me.
There we are, yes.
So, fortunately, he didn't. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I'm busier now than I have been for a long time. We've got a new album coming out, doing lots of interviews.
Right.
A big tour next year, playing at the arena in Liverpool.
Yeah, Echo Arena. No, it's M&S Bank Arena these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. They change the name all the time. Don't
yes, indeed. Yes,
yeah. And, you know, we'll be off to America in the autumn. And, maybe I'll get some rest in 2025.
But you've no desire at the moment to give it all up and just sit back and listen to all the old songs?
No, as you said, I'm absolutely loving it. It's a buzz, and I'm, you know, I don't know what will happen in the future. I don't know we'll how many years we can tour, how many, you know, whether we'll make another studio album. But at the moment, I'm just enjoying every day as it comes.
Absolutely, and I'm guessing if you had your time over again, you'd want to do it in exactly the same way.
Apart from getting a better lawyer when we signed our contract with Virgin Records.
Yes. Yeah. But isn't that the case with lots of new artists and groups, that they often get ripped off by the original management teams?
The bottom line is, you know, we were so excited to be offered a major contract that we just went, where do we sign, you know?
Yeah.
And actually, we never even met our lawyer. This is the thing. The whole thing was so bodged.
Right.
For all, you know, you mentioned how many records we sold. For all the millions of records we sold in the 80s, by the end of the 80s, we owed Virgin £1 million. And it wasn't because we were living in castles and buying Lear.
I'm sure not, no.
Yeah, so that was, yeah, you know, sign a contract when you're 19 and repent at leisure for the rest of your life. But anyway, you know what, bottom line is, we didn't do it for the money. We've been blessed and we're still loving it.
That's right, which is what it's all about. 14 studio albums, 10 live albums, 9 compilation albums, 5 EPs, and 24 singles in the 80s alone. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds pretty good when you say it like
it
that.
It does, yeah. And if you had to pick one 80s artist that you admire more than any other, who would that be, do you think?
Oh, do you know, I've still got a soft spot for Eurythmics, especially
yes.
the first couple of albums. Fantastic songs.
Yeah, highly original group, yeah, yeah. Right, so are you on tour again in the near future?
Yes, yeah, we start in European continents in the end of January.
Right.
And we'll be wheeling around the whole of the UK throughout March. And we've got a couple of gigs in Manchester on March the 1st and 2nd, which is the Friday and Saturday night. So that should be a serious party. And then we'll continue the party when we get to Liverpool on Sunday at the arena on March the 3rd. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, it's been delightful to talk to you. And it's interesting all the local connections that we have and that you're still in Frankby. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
I could have come round to your house with my recorder and done it live.
Yeah, well, pop into the Farmer's Arms and we could have had a pint.
Indeed, that would be very nice. fantastic.
All right then, listen, thanks for talking with me.
Well, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Okay, bye-bye now.